the committee secretaries, apologies. Let's start with the select committee for appropriations and finance, because it's the same people in those two committees, same members. Lupa Balu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Member. Chairperson, on behalf of the select committees on finance and appropriations, I would like to table four apologies. Mr. Monagete's apology, Mr. Keila, Ms. Modara, and Mr. Motlashopin's apology. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Members. The standing committee on appropriations. Can we get indications from that committee? Apologies.
Morning, Chair.
Yes, good day. There you are.
Yes. My name is Nkululeko Mangweni. We did not receive any apology, Chair.
The Standing Committee on Finance. Finance. Mofo. Fine. Those apologies will then have to appear in the minutes of the four committees. Thank you for that. Honourable Members, in preparation for this meeting, except for the documentation sent to us by the PBO, we should have gone back to the MTPBS to get our background for preparations for the national budget for tomorrow, looking at the fiscal framework that's captured on page 7, economic growth, etc., on page 11, the tax revenue, page 21, the budget ceiling, page 23, and government debt, very important, on page 27. That gives you the picture. In the State of the Nation address, His Excellency the President made reference to the following five urgent tasks. Accelerate inclusive economic growth and create jobs. Improve the education system and develop skills we need. You don't need a lot of people with BA degrees. You need people with BA plus degrees. Improve the conditions of life for all South Africans. Step up the fight against corruption. And then, strengthen the capacity of the state to address the needs of the people. And I always refer to the word expertise. You must point the finger to yourself and say, I want to be the best in what I am doing, in whatever job you are. Lastly, that the people come first. That is the framework which the President gave us. But also to look globally what happened at Davos, when world leaders got together, economists, etc., to look at the world economy and so forth. So with that short introduction, over to the PBO, welcome, and you will indicate who will take the lead.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honourable members and colleagues. I will take the lead on presentation, but then I will hand over to my colleague Rashad next to me, and Tatsani and Gloria in the front row. Our team is still small, and the same as what we were last year. We only except for one additional member. Sepetelo is our new financial analyst in the PBO.
Welcome to the family.
He's been thrown into the deep end on all the PBO. So with the pre-budget presentation, we don't really try to predict what will be in the budget. We don't want to predict the numbers that were presented for the new MTSE. We rather try to focus terms of the strategic performance as well as the budget performance, which needs to be the basis of the new NCF going forward. So in terms of SORNA, the chairperson just indicated the main 5 points mentioned by the president, but we also tried to link it to the current long-term vision for the country. So in terms of the improvement in conditions of life for South Africans, it directly links to outcome two. And outcome two is the outcome to provide quality health services or access to health services to the citizens. And the president also indicated that significant steps still needs to be taken towards universal access to quality health. So that is something we really have to focus on and to improve. Okay, sorry. And then in terms of accelerating inclusive economic growth, that focus area directly links to outcome 4 and outcome 6, which are decent employment through inclusive economic growth and an efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network. An additional 100 billion has already been committed for infrastructure, and the president also indicated that we need to provide a head start for young people. And the employment tax incentive has been extended, as well as the work experience has been is not any longer a requirement for entry level into state institutions. In terms of linking the improvement of education system and development of skills, it directly links to outcome one, quality basic education, and it also links to outcome five, a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. In terms of those two focus areas, the president indicated that infrastructure is still very important for our basic health, basic education, as well as higher education. It was also mentioned that there will be a shift in ECD. This will still have to see whether it's going to be a total transfer of function and how the programs in education will provide for that new function. But I suppose the 0 to 4 year olds will still stay with social development, because that is also one of the main focus areas, the 0 to 4 year olds. In terms of the step up of the fight against corruption and state capture, our long-term outcomes are, it's reflected in outcome 3, all people in South Africa are and feel safe, and also outcome 12, which is with regards to the efficient and effective public service. It also links to the strengthening of capacity of the state to address the needs of the people. There was also an announcement in terms of the new business model for ESCOM that will also still have to be fleshed out. We don't know whether it will be included in the new budget or it will be included more to the end of the first 6 months during the adjusted budget. We still don't know how that process is going to fold out. In terms of so we've provided all this information in terms of the strategic direction and the policies that we need to change or improve or revitalize. But now, after the first 5 years of the medium-term strategic framework and the political period, we really have the opportunity to make changes for the next 5 years. So we thought of how would we do that to operationalize all these priorities that has been indicated. So the first step, obviously, will make sure that we review the current 2014-19 medium-term strategic framework, because if there are any blockages that we identify, we need to fix it in the next MTSF, in the 2020-25 MTSF. And all the blockages can also inform the new strategic plans, which are a huge opportunity that we need to use to make these changes. In terms of the expenditure priorities, must inform the new medium-term expenditure framework. The budget office will also do the analysis of the budget that will be tabled tomorrow, and we will present some of the findings next week, Tuesday. In terms of efficiency measures, a few has been indicated. One that was talked about a lot was the macro structure of government. The compensation of employees is always under discussion, and then all the governance issues in terms of the corruption, which the President also mentioned in his State of the Nation address. So members will, if members recall, the PBO is ongoing. We are doing analysis of the National Development Plan as a medium-term strategic framework. Some of the analysis has been presented to members, but we also presented some of the findings to the DPME. So initially, some of the findings that has been presented were that the progress that we've made with the implementation. In 2017-18, 17% of the targets that were set were achieved. And we used 2017-18 data because we had the full year data available to us. Just over 72% of the indicators had baselines in the program of action and in the medium-term strategic framework. The reason why we mentioned this is it's very difficult to evaluate the performance if you don't have a baseline for a specific target. 66% of the targets that were set for 2017-18 were measurable. Some of the targets were just in terms of a narrative, which you can't measure, so you can't really determine whether they can be achieved or not. Reports on 83% of the targets were received. So there's still a lack of reporting on the targets that has been set. 90% of the indicators are linked to a specific process or system to collect the information. So, and all the other information or data that they report on in the program of action on the medium-term strategic framework is just normal administrative data. Almost 87% of the medium-term strategic framework indicators are appropriate. We analyzed it against the criteria for developing indicators, but we also kept in mind the mandate of the national government, because the national government has got a different mandate and they don't really produce a lot of services and products, goods and services. That's more on the level of the local government and the provincial government. So we didn't criticize them if it was an administrative indicator, because that is their function. 36% of the medium-term strategic framework performance indicators are incorporated into annual performance plans of the relevant departments. So this is a problem, because one of the criteria that was indicated in the National Development Plan was that the National Development Plan and MTC must be incorporated in the standard processes of government. So some of the analysis that we did more in terms of the context of the MTSF was that the reporting on the MTSF occurs outside the standard reporting of government performance. So the disadvantage of this is that the MTSF achievements are not audited. Management structures and planning still seems to be not aligned. The structures that are responsible for the formulation of the budget are not the same structures and managers that are responsible for the implementation of the MTSF. One of the findings, for example, were that two of the lead departments are not, their mandates are not really linked to the outcome which they are leading for implementation. Program structures of six departments are not totally suitable to implement the proposals of the MTSF. One example, again, like the ECD that will now be transferred some of the functions to education, government must make sure that there is a program available in the department with a mandate to implement those functions. Not all NDP and NTSF concepts were the same. That is very a technical thing, but it's difficult to compare apples with apples if you don't use the same concepts in the different documents. And provincial reports are not available. The ideal would be that we have a generic set of indicators to measure the performance on a provincial level, and also to receive reports on the performance on the specific on the MTSF requirements. Just to compare some of the improvements that has been made, we'll see overall in 2014 when we did the first assessment on the progress made with the implementation on the MTSF, the performance was only at 38%. And now in 2017 it's at 70%, which is a huge increase in the performance and in achievements. But that does not mean that we achieved greater economic growth or more we created more jobs. Because of the kind of indicators that we have that and that we measure in terms of the medium-term strategic framework, because it's only on a national level. And also when we did our first analysis, we also found a lot of technical issues. And over time, those issues have been addressed because we are also in communication on a regular basis with DPME, and the reporting on the MTSF implementation has improved quite a lot. So when we look at expenditure, the expenditure we've taken also over the five-year period, the medium-term strategic framework period, and the last column you will see is the total that we've spent or the percentage that we've spent over this medium-term strategic framework on the certain function groups. So you'll see that there's 20.6% of overall government spending has been spent on learning and culture over this period. We've got actuals until 2017, and then we've got two estimated numbers included in there. So going forward, so in terms of the formulation of the new budget, National Treasury on an annual basis provides all departments with guidelines. So in terms of the Treasury guidelines, the indication is clear that there are no additional resources available for allocation of the new medium-term expenditure framework. There are, however, 600 million available, but that's specifically for the National Development Policy Support Program, and there's a total different process that needs to be followed to get access to those funds. Non-priority programs and projects must be scaled down or closed down. The DPME is responsible to do evaluations of programs, and that should inform that process and feed into the budget process. GTAC also did a few evaluations, and that was also presented to the committees. Change in spending composition towards economic growth was also one of the instructions. Compensation of employees should not crowd out spending on other critical areas. And then government need to implement operational changes to achieve efficiency on expenditure. And then they provided CPI numbers on which costing must be based or had to be based. And over the medium term, it's 5.3, 5.5, and 5.5 percent. So now I'll hand over to Rashad, my colleague, and he will take you through the economic section and the fiscal framework.
Thank you. Morning, honourable members. So as we are well aware that economic growth is fundamental for job creation, poverty reduction, raising the revenue for the country to meet its socio-economic goals, to meet our public finance objectives over the medium term, and our socio-economic goals. The NDP 6 years ago identified a growth target of 5.4%, so that's the blue line on the graph in front of you. However, over the past 6 years since the launch of the NDP, growth has been below 2% on average. That's the orange line in the graph in front of you. Based on this, it does seem that the NDP target is a bit ambitious. More concerning than this are the grey bars in the graph in front of you, as well as the green bars, which present a concept in economics known as the growth potential or potential growth, which essentially says that if all our factors of production, so all our factories, our roads, our dams, our electricity capacity, all our labor was employed, right, without being inflationary, that's the maximum this country could grow sustainably over a period of time. So that is an estimate. So I've provided both the world, I mean, both the IMF as well as the African Reserve Bank's estimates of potential growth. Now, what is concerning about this is that the potential growth for the country, okay, these are estimates, is significantly lower than what the NDP targets. And with that being said, we still in many years have performed below our potential. So the critical question over here, given the importance of growth and the centrality of economic growth for the realization of socio-economic objectives, is how do we then improve growth over the medium term? So that's the first question. And what policies are required and what supports is provided in the budget for the realization of such. And as my colleague Nelia has noted, that the recent thrust talks about in the budget and budget planning talks about improving economic growth as well as spending on boosting economic growth. But in addition to budget allocation, it's more about the structure of the economy. It's about the economy's ability to attract investment. It's about the economy's ability and country's ability to improve our human capital that results in higher growth over the medium term. The second question that comes out of this large gap between potential growth and what the NDP targets is the reasonableness of government's ambitions and the state's ambitions over the medium term. So given that high levels of growth are targeted and required for the realization of a particular socio-economic path for the country and economic objectives for the country, are these then reasonable over the medium term? And that's quite a fundamental question. I would also like to make a proviso that the declining trend of potential growth that we've observed over the past 10 years is not an isolated or South Africa-specific one. It does have a global context, and one needs to view it in that context. With that said, we now present the outlook or the change in the outlook for the South African economy, informed by the global economy since the MTBPS. So over the past 9 months, the outlook for the global economy has been revised marginally downwards, more so for emerging market and developing economies. So that's the first three rows in the graph in front of you. Similarly, expectations for global trade, which South Africa depends on, has also been the outlook has also been revised downwards slightly. Since the MTBPS last year, both the South African Reserve Bank as well as the Reuters median poll have also downwardly revised their outlook for the South African economy, very marginally, but over the medium term. The implication of this is that it may be possible that there is a marginal downward revision, but not significant, for the South African economy that may be presented tomorrow. Honourable colleagues, and I want to turn your attention to this table, which is quite telling because it combines the effects of poorer than expected economic growth and its direct impact on the fiscus, and that's through revenue. So this table presents PBO's budget estimates for the current financial year, that's 2018-19, to the estimates from the budget review of 2018, as well as the MTBPS of 2018. And for 2018 MTBPS in October last year, government downwardly revised its main budget revenue estimate by 22.8 billion compared to what was presented in the budget review last year. So we've looked at these numbers. We've taken the first 9 months of numbers available for the current fiscal year, and based on that, we estimate a slightly larger revenue shortfall compared to what is presented both in the budget review as well as in the MTBPS. And this reflects both the poor state, primarily the poor state of the South African economy, which then in turn informs poor revenue collection. The 19 billion rand shortfall that we've estimated is primarily due to poor CIT and PIT performance. That's corporate income tax and personal income tax performance on a year-to-date basis. So that's from April 2018 up until December 2018, so in the 9 months of data that we do have access to. So over the first 9 months of 2018-19, corporate income tax, and this is quite concerning actually, receipts actually declined by 1.1% in nominal terms. Now, this is quite concerning, and it reflects the poor state of the South African economy. That's comparing the first 9 months of 2018-19 to 2017-18, and it reflects poor corporate profitability as well as poor economic growth. And in addition to that, over the first quarter of the current fiscal year, we experienced a quarterly contraction. So between January 2018 and June 2018, we were essentially in a technical recession with two successive quarters of contracting growth. I would, however, like to make a proviso that significant shortfall compared to what was estimated is in part because of erratic corporate tax refunds that have been issued over the past couple of months, and that may actually have resulted in a slightly larger shortfall estimate. Similarly, personal income tax receipts have only grown by 7.6% over the first 9 months of the current fiscal year, compared to the five-year average of 10%. And this, in essence, reflects the weak state of employment growth. So employment growth is in rather poor, as well as poor remuneration growth over both the public and the private sector that we've seen in data available. Over the first 9 months of fiscal year 2018-19, VAT grew by 10.3%. But we must bear in mind that the growth in VAT also comes off the back of a 1 percentage point increase in the VAT rate. So in the absence of the 1 percentage point increase in the VAT rate, VAT receipts would have actually been a lot poorer. And this is actually indicated by the fact that retail sales, which is the base for VAT, growth has actually grown by 2% only in real terms. Similarly, household consumption over the first 6 months of last year only grew by 1.3%, again reflecting the poor state of the South African economy and pressure on South African households. Based on the first 9 months of data, so what we're showing is that PBO then expects a higher main and consolidated budget balance for the current year, and with implications over the medium term. And this will obviously result in a larger gross and net debt as a share of GDP over the medium term. So based on this expectation of fiscal slippage, not just for the current financial year, but over the medium term, based on poor revenue growth, what seems like slightly optimistic revenue buoyancy assumptions, as well as nominal GDP inflation, there are several impacts it has on the fiscal framework over the medium term that emanate from growth revenue and may also have implications for the country's debt as well as contingent liabilities. We've noted early on in the presentation that there's now pressure to try and contain certain types of expenditure. There's pressure to try and improve efficiency, improve governance and allocation. At the same time, there are other pressures emanating particularly from SOEs, in particular ESCOM, which may actually have an impact on the country's ability to realize its estimates on the deficit, but more importantly, its estimates on debt over the medium term. So what we're showing over here is something that was presented in the MTPS from last year, and this is essentially the revisions that were required in different expenditure items to maintain the expenditure ceiling, or other adjustments to the expenditure ceiling. And why this is quite important is because Africa's fiscal anchor has been the expenditure ceiling, which has been in play for about 7 years. And for the most part, the South African government has tried quite hard to maintain this expenditure ceiling as its chief fiscal anchor. Now, there are certain expenditure pressures that were presented at last year's budget, primarily from higher education, that required an adjustment to the budget that was anticipated in MTPS of 2017. Similarly, what we have to look out for tomorrow is whether the fiscal pressures emanating from ESCOM's financial situation have an impact on the expenditure ceiling, and if government attempts to maintain or maintain the expenditure ceiling, where will the additional resources be made available from? That's the first part. The second part related to this is regarding debt. Because if government then is unable to make space within the current allocation for any fiscal support that is provided to ESCOM, this would result in additional debt being issued, which then has implications for the debt as a share of GDP over the medium term, which is currently expected to grow to 55% at the end of the current MTF.
Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. In addition to the revenue work that the PBO did in preparation for the budget tomorrow, we looked at some tax developments from the last budget that was tabled in 2018. One of those was the employment tax incentives. The first extension of the ETI was based on a review process in consultation with NEDLAC, which indicated that this incentive showed a modest growth in youth employment. It showed about 690,000 jobs were created in the 2016 tax year. It is worth noting that this incentive was first brought about in January 2014. So the report in 2016 was based on 2 years of the incentive, and because of the time lag with tax information, we could only rely on the 2015 data. As we know that through the SONA, it was announced that this incentive will be extended for a further 10 years. So the questions we're asking is, do we have sufficient evidence to say that it is creating sufficient jobs, particularly in sectors where jobs would have been in any case created? Ideally, you would look for such an incentive to have an add-on effect, not necessarily be given to sectors that would have in any case created employment. So it's the correct targeting of the incentive. And also the question is, what happens to the employees at the end of the 2 years where the incentive is available to an employee? Do they get absorbed in the job market, or is it a matter of getting new people at each 2 year interval? So those are the questions that we would like for the executive to hopefully answer through another study. The second tax development we looked at is the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. What is going to happen effective from 1 April 2019 is that state-owned entities will not be granted a deduction on any expenditure that they disclose in the financial statements as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. At the face of it, this comes across as a governance issue, but it is being addressed through a tax solution. So essentially you are saying the PFMA says ideally we should not be having any fruitless and wasteful expenditure. For the 2017-2018 PFMA cycle, $2.5 billion was reported as fruitless and wasteful. Now, the PFMA does outline what procedures or processes need to be followed should fruitless and wasteful expenditure be reported, and that includes consequence management. Now, the problem becomes, if there are consequence management measures within the PFMA, but those are not correctly rolled out, what are the chances that fruitless and wasteful expenditure will actually reduce going forward? Particularly given that this amendment will only be applicable to public entities which are partially or fully owned by the state. So at the end of it all, no one is going to be directly affected. No one's profit line or pocket or bonus will be directly affected. So the question becomes, is this going to be effective if the consequent management aspect is not fully addressed? Also, the question becomes, yes, we are addressing fruitless and wasteful expenditure, but what about irregular and unauthorized expenditure? I think we can get comfort in the fact that the president in the SONA did indicate that there's going to be a presidential SOE council. Hopefully those issues will be dealt with in more detail. And also the fact that the Auditor General will now have more powers in addressing issues like unauthorized and irregular expenditure. The third tech development we looked at was the implementation of the health promotion levy. Of course, we do acknowledge that this was an important act to be brought to place to address the high consumption of sugar in the country. What was interesting for us to note is that $1.6 billion was the estimated revenue collection from this levy. But for the 9 months, for the third quarter ended 31 December 2018, already $2.2 billion has been collected from this levy. Now the question becomes, fantastic, we are collecting revenue, but are we really addressing the issue of sugar consumption? If we have already collected way more than what we had anticipated, that's a reflection of consumption being higher than what we had hoped for. The last one is on VAT. As we know that there was a percentage increase on the rate of VAT, and it was announced that the zero-rated list will be expanded to include white bread flour, cake flour, and sanitary pads, effective from 1 April 2019. This obviously means that we'll be collecting lesser VAT because of the expansion of the zero-rated list. I think it is worth noting that we need to revisit the current zero-rated list and perhaps interrogate if it is still relevant. The fruits and the vegetables is the story that we've always been referring to because as soon as we expand the zero-rated list, it is evident that we're going to collect lesser VAT. But do we really need everything that's currently in the zero-rated list? Again, I think it would be a worthy thought to consider the revisiting of the rate increase and to actually incorporate that decision as recommended by the Standing Committee on Finance in the MTBPS report, to incorporate that in a money bill so that we have commitment from the executive to review the rate increase in VAT. So those are the tax developments that we looked at. And then as we do at each pre-budget presentation, we looked at the spending of the votes as at 31 December 2018. What we want to highlight here is that because the data is only for the three quarters going into 2019, we are not saying that votes are underspending or overspending. We are just trying to indicate which votes are spending slower than others or which ones are spending faster than the others. The actual conclusion on the over or the underspending will only be indicative at the end of the fiscal year. So we indicated there public enterprises. What we wanted to bring to the members' attention there is just the special appropriations that was given to SAA during the MTBPS for $5 billion. It was stated in the special appropriations that there will be criteria to be met by the SAA, which the Minister of Finance will draw up in writing. And with each transfer to SAA, before and after, those criteria would need to be evaluated. And the special appropriations also indicated that all the transfers should have been done by the end of March 2019. If the full transfer is not being done, the money will then be taken back. So we just need clarification from the executive on where that process is. Thank you. I will hand over to Fasani.
Okay. Good morning, honorable members. I'll be presenting on the management of the South African government debt. In particular, as you see from the graph presented, we know that there is no agreed-upon level at which debt is considered to be high or unacceptable within the country. So what we want to point out or flag is that debt service costs are essentially have the potential to squeeze out spending on other areas and other programs. Government has taken steps to mitigate risks associated with increasing borrowing costs through issuing debt over a longer maturity period. Although, as we know, net loan debt, as my colleague has stated already, is still expected to increase over the next 3 years. The fastest growing area of spending within the expenditure of the fiscus is debt service cost, and this is reflected because of the widening budget deficits and the projected increase in debt. As of the 2018 budget review, on average, 14% of revenue will be used to service debt over the next 3 years. That is for every 14 cents of every rand collected that we receive as revenue, 14 cents of that will be dedicated to paying back the country's debt, or our interest payments, essentially. Added to that is the effect of the pressures of the weakening of the rand, our exchange rate, and how much of the fiscus is dedicated to servicing our debt. So essentially, we need to have a look at limiting the amount of foreign-denominated debt, which would assist in putting down the pressure on the growth of servicing our debt service costs. Also, we have to look at restricting the issuance of inflation-linked bonds to reduce the risks associated with inflation. Essentially, we know that debt management can only do so much. We have to have a look at how to manage our overall debt levels and the impact of the global credit conditions on managing the country's overall debt levels. And tomorrow's budget review will be a perspective on whether we are managing our debt levels or we expected debt service costs to form such a huge share of our expenditures over the MTF. Furthermore, something that we have to review annually, we know that S&P, Moody's and Fitch do a ratings, a credit ratings, our sovereign credit ratings, on our foreign currency and on our local currency. At present, S&P and Fitch both rate the currencies, foreign and local currency, at sub-investment grade, while Moody's has kept our rating at medium investment grade. Reasons for S&P and Fitch keeping South Africa at sub-investment grade include South Africa's growth path being uncertain and the government's debt burden continuing on a rising path. There are concerns over the pace of economic growth as per capita, as well as the large fiscal burden and the sizable contingent liabilities. Furthermore, S&P and Fitch have reiterated the need for an improvement in business confidence, as well as fast-tracking the reform of state-owned companies. At the time of Moody's review, or sovereign rating review of South Africa, it was of the opinion that the previous weakening of South Africa's institutions would, and I quote, gradually reverse under the more transparent and predictable policy framework of President Cyril Ramaphosa. In light of this, we anticipate that Moody's will review the country's sovereign ratings once again, but we need to stress that there are implications for a downgrade from Moody's on the country. A downgrade would result in the country losing its investment grade status on its local currency debt. This would result in the exclusion of South Africa from the World Government Bond Index. As a consequence, foreign bondholders have the potential to sell off local currency South African bonds. Approximately 40% of our local currency bond is held by foreigners, so this could increase how much we do pay for debt. And this could make debt more expensive than budgeted for in the future or tomorrow as we review. Also, what is important to what might be important for Moody once they do review the sovereign credit ratings of the country will be the effect that Eskom's financial situation might have on the country's credit outlook, and this we will anticipate the budget some of the conversation that the president had in SONA to come more distinctively within the budget that will be reviewed tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Just to summarize then, strengthening of current national priorities, because most of the focus areas or highlights in SONA can be linked back to our long-term vision for the country. There are currently opportunities to improve implementation plans and reporting on performance, especially of the new medium-term strategic framework. We need to incorporate our priorities into the standard planning, budgeting and reporting processes. It will make reporting processes more efficient and effective, and also much easier for Parliament and also other institutions to monitor and evaluate performance. The focus is still on and will still be in the budget tomorrow on efficiency measures and cutting on non-essential goods, reprioritize funds within the current expenditure ceiling. They will look at tax incentives, increase in revenue sources. If we can't increase, we'll have to reduce expenditure. And the oversight roles of the different levels of government will be very important to make sure that we govern and we implement our priorities efficiently. Thank you very much, members.
Thank you for Team PBO for stimulating us for tomorrow's tabling of the national budget. Welcome to those honourable members that joined the meeting. Before we go to the questions, just space. 8 and 9, honourable members, gives us some insight on what to focus on doing oversight over national and provincial departments. If you look at achievements 2017-18, I would like to see the achievements for 2018-19, but that will only be possible after June, July. I take that. So that is for the sixth parliament, and the staff must minute that meeting be called as a joint meeting. Then on page 15 of your presentation, excuse me, effect on the 2019 MTF, main budget balance, etc. If you look at page 26 of the MTPBS document, it refers to debt service cost of 202.5 billion rand. Is that incorporated in the 234? Just want that clarity. Yes. Members, questions? Number one. Number two. Going down that way. Three. Four. Five. Six. And co-chair will come in when she thinks it's applicable. Over to you, members. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and thanks very much for your presentation. It was very, very interesting. I just want to ask a question about the macroeconomic picture. Now, throughout your presentation, you've given lots of inputs, and specifically on the slower economic growth, the revenue shortfall, the increased government debt and thus servicing costs, and then increasing government expenditure. So if you take all of that together, the picture doesn't look incredibly rosy as far as I can see. And you haven't commented on sustainability. One of your members did mention about that there isn't any agreed idea as to, you know, where does the debt end. But we all know that if you keep going, you've got to keep paying for it, especially if it's foreign debt. So that we're getting into difficulty as far as I can see. So clearly something needs to change. Obviously the economy must grow, which is unlikely. Revenue must grow, which is unlikely because the economy is not going to grow. Government spending must be restrained. That clearly isn't happening, and also with rampant corruption, it's just accelerating all the time. So our debt will then inevitably increase, unless we actually crowd out the service delivery, which is not, I'm sure, what we want to do. So you've given a lot of facts, and I'm very pleased about that. But what I didn't hear is any commentary around the sustainability of the current macroeconomic picture. Because surely as a parliamentary budget office, you must have formulated an opinion on that. Thank you, Chair.
Number two, Honourable Kubasa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to go to slide 9. Chair, that report, although it doesn't take us to the current financial year, does look like an above average performance of government. Significantly above average government performance. Have you perhaps looked at the reasons why, in spite of that, it seems that this above average performance of government doesn't seem to be filtering through onto the ordinary people on the ground? On slide 12, there's always been these GDP growth predictions from different sources, the IMF, the World Bank, South African Reserve Bank, National Treasury sometimes, and the others. And there's never been a consensus on the real figure. What accounts for this difference on the same prediction? And how could that be? In most cases, all the time, the reality is quite different from the predictions, as is the case now. On slide 11. Not slide 11 really, but the question is, does the PPO foresee an upward movement of GDP growth towards the 2030 target of 5.4? And if you foresee that, what would accelerate us towards that target from here onwards? Well, that's
order.
That's an irrelevant
Well, you can decide that on the 8th of May, 78 days from today. Honourable Kubasa, continue.
The tax deficit that was cited of 50 billion rand shortfall in the medium term budget policy statement very recently it's been projected to be going to be 27 billion rand, almost an almost 50% shift towards a better position than what it was in September, October. What accounts for this improved situation now, this almost 50% improvement. It's still a deficit, but a lot better than the 50 billion that was mentioned a few months ago. So I would like to understand what accounts for that now, especially because not much seems to have improved at SARS in terms of their structures and all the problems that they are having. Although, of course, significant progress has been made in terms of stabilizing that institution. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kamaza, Honorable Isaac. Order. Order.
Nice when you light up a fire.
When the member,
I can blame
you. So, Honorable Isaac, just give me a second. When a member poses a question, the member has an opportunity to put the question. Let's listen to the question. But please, members, don't be provocative. We can do it outside when we canvass for votes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. Chairperson, the PPO always gives a very interesting summary, and then it's always nice to compare what comes out tomorrow. But BS May. Sometimes there seems to be a breakdown in communication between National Treasury and PBO also. We've seen that over the years. But firstly, mine is just a comment. The slide is not numbered. It's in the beginning pages. That's the one on the just after introduction where you go on SONA strategic direction for the budget. And you comment. Now, if you look at the second page of that, it makes good reading, but it's just a comment, Chairperson. Anybody from outside of this country reading this page, you begin to glean that this might sounds like some country that's just gained its independence and is now beginning to put its life and plans together. But it was just a comment. Then, Chairperson, on slide number, slide number 14, I think it is, yeah. Slide number 14, the one was presented by Rashad. At the bottom of that slide, under marginal fiscal slippage, right at the bottom, you talk about the tax buoyancy. Now, you know, you allude to 1.51 in 2018, and then 1.21 in the midterm 2018 budget, and then down again to 0.9. Perhaps if you can just simplify for me and just quantify exactly the crux of what you're implying there. The one other question was covered by the previous speaker. Then finally, Chairperson, on slide number 17, I want to ask some tax developments. This fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which is, as was alluded to, specifically, I understand, alluding to SOEs. The question arises is, why now only, Chairperson? Why are we only addressing this now? Sure, we've just at the end of November passed the Public Audit Amendment Bill, which will give the Auditor General, etc., extra powers to make certain recommendations or take certain actions. But the question is, it's probably been international best practice for many years. Why has this only been alluded to now? Chairperson, then Lucy Barsa covered that last question. I'm done. Thank you, Chair.
Just on your last point, in the intervention in Northwest Province, 46 cases is being investigated by the WOPS, and this amendment bill that became an act is assisting. Because it's not a standing alone legislation. The AG, it's a cooperation of intergovernmental structures dealing with this issue. That's what it is. And you're welcome to attend the ad hoc committee meeting this afternoon when we deal with our legacy report, which is included. Thank you, Mr. Uba Shabangu.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question would be with regard to ECD centers from social development to basic education. time frame. Those people are suffering. They are earning, where I come from, they are earning 5,500 a month. Whereas we say the people that are working for us must get 12 point something a month. Are we going to improve their qualifications to be on par with those of basic education? Then, with regard to the politicians, this fight against corruption, are we going to deal with the politicians that are involved in corruption, or are we going to still use the delay tactics with regard to the politicians and punish only the officials? I'm addressing you, Chairperson. Yeah, but there are people who among yammering after I've said something. Compensation of employees. You seem to be quiet on this. Which mechanism are you going to put in place with regard to the compensation of employees across the board? Page, the provincial reports are not available. What is it that you are doing if they are not available? Are there any consequences thereafter? And then the slower revenue collection. Why? What is the cause of this? How do we intend improving out of this? Is there a mechanism in place in order to improve the revenue collection? And finally, with regard to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, this seems to be the order of the day in most provinces and SOEs. Let alone the municipality. You have sufficient evidence that most of the municipalities are in this mess. And what is it that you're going to do to improve this? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Shivangu. The PBO can't reply on behalf of a department. They do analysis of information that we just put the record straight. You can't ask them what SARS going to do. That question you must ask Thursday 12:30 in this venue when we engage with briefing done by the Minister of Finance, and the whole contingent of the Treasury will be here and SARS. About the rebuilding of SARS, why? To increase revenue collection. Yes. We want him. He's going to get the question. On the other issue, you refer to politicians. Everyone, every person that's implicated.
Oh.
Yes. Go and read our committee report of the ad hoc committee in detail. 39 pages. You'll find it there. And it's, the table is set for the 6th Parliament to engage with it. We drafted that agenda already. So, yes, we are serious. We are serious. Thank you, Honorable Shibango, Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, let me start off by thanking the PBO for doing a sterling work of the mandate that is given to them. And of course, Chair, I agree, they are not the department. Chair, my first question is on the 17th slide, where it talks about the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The issue of consequent management is a big issue for
all departments. So in the analysis of that, what has the PBO's advice been in terms of saying what is it that can be done to deal with the issue of fraudulent and wasteful expenditure in order for you to empower us as members to be able to interact with the department? And I think Honorable Chairperson, the issue of zero-rated items could be an area, I think I agree with you, that it is an area that we need to be revisiting from time to time, because sorry, the concession was based on a variety of people making their own representation regarding that. My next one, Chair, is on the analysis of the MDP implementation. there, one is interested to know at the last bullet point, for example, where it says 36% of MTSF performance indicators were incorporated into annual performance plans of relevant departments. Now, that is a very low percentage. Now, are we able to say which departments did not cooperate well with it so that we are able to focus on that? A question of clarity on the issue of the new business model for ESCOM, which is a current debate, which is a very hot one. Now, has the PBO looked at it and found out whether there are pros and cons towards that? What would have been the best strategic direction for government? The last one, Chair, for me, I'm really thankful that PBO has dealt with the current situation and to a certain extent also take up what has been happening in the past so that we are able to make a scientific comparison so that we're able to know that based on where we come from, there is an improvement towards where we're going. I'm basing this comment on one of the first slides, which I cannot see where I script it now, Chair, but I hope the officials understand, and I once more want to thank them for their collective effort in making the analysis. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks for that appreciation, Honourable Tobias.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm shortchanged because I've missed the most important part of the presentation by PBO that looks to the macroeconomic policy framework, which becomes a guide to engage on the budget. Forgive my approach because of that limited experience to what has been said prior to the speakers that I've listened to because we're in another meeting. But let me also start with a comment. You see, PBO should decide at what point does it make comments on policy and at what point does it just analyze challenges. Have you listened to the lady sitting next to Gloria speaking about debt to GDP and what should happen? You see, when opposition parties take you on about what they expect from you, it's based on some of the comments you make that leads to them to expect you not to take a neutral view on giving analysis. You need to decide at what point do you want to do that. But let me get to the issues that I wanted to speak to, and some will speak to the macroeconomic framework. It might have been said in my absence that we might want to look at structural changes of the economy, and perhaps there's been models that has been presented, because to me that's where it starts. It starts where we put a framework on economic growth and looking at whether
dealing with issues of expenditure ceiling or how we deal with public debt becomes a pace setter on how we're going to manage limited funds, or are we going to look at the tax policy as a means to achieve economic growth and job creation. So it's one of the fundamentals that can be thrown to us to look at on regular basis. So it will be very interesting at some point to always engage in that. I always insist on it, that there should be a discussion between National Treasury, the PBO and us on this issue, because it informs us how we move in a programmatic fashion to achieve what we want to achieve. Secondly, Rashad makes a very interesting assertion on the issue of why there's a decline in CIT. You juxtapose it to the drop in remuneration in the private sector and job creation. To me, that's a fundamental argument, because there's a perception generally that economic growth, job creation, it's a primary responsibility of the state, and we have not included the role of the private sector in growing the economy and how it will impact with revenue collected for distribution purposes. Now, I would be interested, Rashad, to give us figures so that we don't speak on it from a generic perspective, but to attach statistics to it so that we can argue from an informed position as we engage. The other issue, it's how Gloria ventured into her discussion, very interesting for a change. I'll be measured, Chair, because it's a different time altogether how I want to engage. One of the things that you spoke to was the tax incentives and its role in the economy. You argue from a vantage point that says they are provided even in sectors that will have created jobs ordinarily. Now it's a policy challenge, and I don't know. That's why I'm saying I'm a little bit limited in terms of how far can I go in the engagement on these matters, because I thought there was a reason why we put tax incentives and why we believe that as a state, because we don't have a direct impact of job creation as we expect the private sector to do that. So the two of you, Rashad, and you speak from a different vantage point. There's one who says, okay, fine, don't give tax incentives. And the others say, but the private sector is not creating jobs. Then the question becomes, what type of interventions does the state make to ensure that we lure investors to create more jobs? So I don't think you have assisted us. You created the problem for us to think deeper into what then should happen to change the structure of the economy. The other issue is about the tax reductions. You see, you took a physical approach to Gloria, to the issue of how you inject funding to state-owned entities. You looked at it from a perspective of a mathematician who says, you didn't spend well, I penalize you by not allocating more. You have subtracted a policy perspective that seeks to strengthen the role of state-owned enterprises in the economy. That's why I'm saying, for some reason, PBO, you have taken a policy attack towards the role of the state and its interventions, and I'm limited because I want to engage you, but the challenge is that at what point do I do it? Do I do it now to show you why there's a need for such interventions to happen, and not look at it from only a physical perspective of rents and cents as they are calculated, but to look at the long-term impact of why there's a need for state-owned enterprises to exist. So this platform limits the engagement, because we will have to have a separate platform to deal with it. To a point where the role of the Auditor General will be strengthened to take certain actions I think we'll always understand that moving from this fiscal year going forward, such activities of public expenditure and unauthorized expenditures will be kept because the AG has been strengthened. But from a perspective of a role of a state-owned enterprise and its business models, its effectiveness and efficiency, I think you should change that in terms of what you could have suggested for us to take forward. In terms of the health promotion levy, I thought you were going to applaud for having achieved what it was intended for from the perspective of SCOFE, because its intention was to change our revenue model by collecting more. As to whether the policy itself is working or not, it's an issue for a debate for tomorrow. The same debate that took shape when we were discussing tobacco and its role in society. Perhaps we should separate the two, because from a financial perspective, it has achieved what it wanted to achieve. But if you want to look at social conduct of individuals, whether they've stopped smoking or not, I don't think it was intended to measure that. Because then we need to change and be priests and so on and start to preach and then not collect taxes altogether to inject money in the fiscal. Then I'll be happy to do that outside there, starting with my daughter to tell her to stop smoking and so on. Yeah, she does. I'm going to round up, Chair. No, but I did say it.
Honourable Tobias did the homework.
Yeah,
carry on with your questions. We have that time.
I'm trying to make comparison in the last budget. National Treasury said public debt will reduce to 56% in the current fiscal year. Have you tried to measure that so that we can compare what they're going to present to us tomorrow as they do so? Because I did try to look at the document. It did not specifically speak to debt in confines. One fundamental policy matter that has been raised is whether ESCOM will put pressure to the expenditure ceiling. Of course, there's going to be injections, isn't it? It will definitely change and put pressure on the expenditure ceiling. But equally, I juxtapose it to the fact that the gap in revenue shortfall has moved from 9 billion to something else. In percentage, Rashad, you said 19%. So can we start to also make those comparisons so that when we speak to that, we speak with the budget in its entirety and not cherry pick issues of policy, but and not amplify that in an event that there's going to be this pressure and this hole has been plugged in terms of revenue shortfall. So that when we go to National Treasury, we are able to look at these things from a concise perspective. Chair, let me pause. I'll come back at a later stage. I'm saying I apologize because I was so changed. I came in a little bit later and I've missed a lot of presentations and I'm still trying to. And lastly, can I request that a paper be prepared for engagement on tax incentives so that we can engage you if you guys have time, at your spare time, so that we put into perspective how we should look at it going forward. Thanks.
On the 27th of February, there will be public hearings conducted by the two committees on finance, the NA and the NCP, on the fiscal framework and revenue proposals, where we will also be dealing with the tax issues. Acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Honorable Karim, Co-Chair Karim. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your engagement, Honorable Members. This meeting will be adjourned at not later than 12:30. As I indicated, on page 8 and 9, especially page 8, in the middle, two lead departments' visions and purposes are not aligned. Which departments? Program structures of 6 departments are not totally suitable. Which departments? I want you to name them. Why?
because that will assist us in our engagement, in our oversight when we engage with the departments. Referring to the 2018-19 financial year, quarterly reports is available where analysis can be done, referring to page 9. That is available because the PC's portfolio committees deal with that, as well as committees in the NCOP, and then also in provinces. So that reports are available, but it is the way this report is structured and presented to the parliamentary committee, whether it's here at national or in the province. And the credibility of that information. And that's what we picked up in Northwest. The credibility of information being submitted. And that's where the research unit must go back a few years to get a trend what happened. How did you deliver? Did you deliver, etc. Thank you. Over to you.
Level of expenditure, debt levels without defaulting, meet his social obligations and maintain public finances that are relatively sound, at the same time without any major fiscal adjustment, as well as social sustainability is also considered in that by the IMF definition. Now, it was pretty clear that up until 20, it was pretty clear based on the downward revisions to the expenditure ceiling over the past 5 or 6 years that adjustments needed to be made to the expenditure outlook over the medium term to ensure sustainability. Similarly, given significant downward revisions to growth and revenue, there was a massive shortfall projected in the MTBPS of 2017. Consequently, government introduced new revenue measures to ensure sustainability. So in doing so, what the PBO does, it looks at measures put forward by government, both on the revenue and the expenditure side, to maintain the trajectory that government projects for debt over the medium term. More importantly, we note the primary balance, so the outer year of the MTF primary balance, has always been approaching zero but never really realizing zero. So in the MTBPS from last year, the primary balance was minus 0.2%, and that seemed plausible. Now with these marginal revisions, it does raise certain questions. But having said that, generally when consistently when government presents the budget or the MTBPS, they are concomitant measures or commensurate measures to ensure sustainability. In considering it, we then, for instance, the slide that's on the screen right now provide checks and balances on what's being projected. So what is presented was how we revised the MTBPS, and then we, in our assessment of it, identify certain risks associated with that. And that big one in this particular case has been the projected revenue shortfall, along with fiscal or expenditure pressures emanating from ESCOM. And then an additional point, the reality is government spending has actually been slowing, and certain areas have seen government expenditure growth slowing even in real terms. So I do think there have been significant expenditure measures being put through to ensure sustainability. Regarding slide 12, as Honorable Kopaza's question, the gray bars and the green bars don't refer to estimates of economic growth, but rather refer to estimates of potential growth. Now, given different approaches to estimating potential growth, they will be different estimates of potential growth. However, your question does raise the point about the accuracy of growth estimates, which we also provided in the next slide, on slide 13. So we've got Reuters' estimate, as well, which is the most recent, as well as the African Reserve Bank's from last month. What PBO also does in looking and considering the importance of growth estimates and its impact on the fiscal framework and fiscal sustainability is we assess the accuracy of government's growth estimates as well as revenue estimates. So that's on an annual basis, and our next report will be released next month. Over the past 3 years since we started producing that report, we've noted that on average, National Treasury's growth estimates are at least as accurate, if not more accurate, than other agencies, as well as there being no evidence of biases or biasness in the growth estimates. The next edition will be released next month. Regarding slide 14, there were some questions. In reality, the revenue outlook is actually, I'd like to clarify that, has actually worsened. It is our outlook compared to what was presented in the 2018 MTBPS. There was a question regarding tax buoyancy, the bottom line of the slide from Honorable Esak. Tax buoyancy essentially is a measure of how much revenue grows relative to how much GDP grows. So if GDP grows by 1%, revenue will grow by 1% if the buoyancy is 1. Now if the buoyancy is greater than 1, or the expectation of is greater than 1, for every 1 percentage point that GDP grows, revenue grows by 1.1 or 1.2, 1.3, depending on the estimate. What we've got in the third column on that graph over here is our estimate of revenue buoyancy, which is sub 1, which is a bit of a concern. Again, this is an estimate based on estimates for the fiscal year nominal GDP growth for 2018-19, as well as our estimates of revenue for that particular point in time. What we have seen is buoyancy actually declining over time, so actual buoyancy, not estimates of buoyancy. This is a bit of a concern. It requires further analyses. It's insufficient to say that this is because of inefficiency on the receiver of revenue, although that may potentially be a part in it. and it requires further investigation, but it's important to keep your eye on this number. When economies are growing faster, buoyancy actually increases. So the economy grows by 1%, buoyancy will be 1.5, 1.6, 1.7, and those are pretty nice numbers to have. But when it's sub 1, it's actually more of a concern, and that limits your revenue growth. Honorable Tobias, your question regarding PIT and CIT. Both PIT and CIT have performed rather poorly on a year-to-date. I did note that corporate income tax on a year-to-date has been very poor. It's in nominal terms declined by 1.1%. And regarding the data backing this up, this is consistent with the numbers we've seen on gross operating surplus and net operating surplus of corporates in this country. Similarly, we've also looked at the numbers in detail on personal income tax, and both the growth in employment in the public sector as well as the private sector has been rather poor, as well as remuneration growth. So personal income tax is a function of the total number of people who are formally employed paying tax as well as their remuneration levels in a particular year. And we've seen that perform quite poorly over the year. So we have those numbers. If you'd like more detail, we can provide that for you. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. I will attempt to address the three questions. I will answer the three questions. The first one was on fruitless and wasteful expenditure on SOEs. I think I want to first just confirm that our analysis was confined to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure as a tech development. We are in no way trying to question or address the role or the relevance of the state-owned entities. I think we can all acknowledge that that's a deeper and a more broader policy conversation. So that's not the intention of the presentation. And just addressing
can that cell phone please be put on silent? Cut it out totally. Thank you.
On the question of why now, in terms of taking away the deduction for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I think it's long overdue. Not just taking away the deduction, but numerous ways in addressing the ever-growing fruitless and wasteful expenditure, together with irregular and unauthorized expenditure. We are seeing numerous interventions in addressing these issues. For example, the establishment of the SOE Council. But we're also seeing an increase in the SOEs being audited by the Auditor General. In 2014, only 24 SOEs were audited by the Auditor General. The rest were audited by private audit firms. In 2018, during the 2018 PFMA cycle, we saw an increase from the 24 to the 34. So there is definitely more efforts in addressing fruitless and wasteful expenditure and just the management of the SOEs. I do want to also emphasize that the fruitless and wasteful expenditure is not just confined to SOEs, and there are government structures that are exempt from tax. So it's a great initiative, but it will not stretch far enough to significantly address fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So there was a question to ask, what does the PBO advise in consequence management? We also view that the PFMA does have sufficient guidelines. There are also regulations in how to address fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It goes as far as saying you need to conduct investigations, you need to try and recoup the monies from the responsible individual who committed the error or was negligent, resulting in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But the actual implementation of the PFMA is what's at question. And this goes to management of the SOEs and the government structures, the board of directors. So that is our thought on how to really address the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. As I said, that the issue at hand is a governance matter, As to how the tax measure will address the issue remains to be seen. And then on the tax incentives, I think again I want to emphasize that in no way are we saying take away the tax incentive. What we are trying to just amplify here is that you give tax incentives as a policy decision, if that is the case, but it would be prudent and probably beneficial to, on a regular basis, evaluate the effectiveness of those incentives. Are they achieving the objectives that you would have initially set out for them to achieve? And if certain things are not working out, then adjust where feasible. Very often we get a response from the National Treasury when asked, is the incentive working, that there's a study being that's taking place, but it's very rare that we actually get to the output of that study. As I said, with the ETI, the last study that we are aware of was the one conducted in 2016. We are now in 2019, and the same ETI is now being extended for the next 10 years. Now the question is, what is informing that extension? I think when National Treasury presented, initially they had asked for a 5-year extension, but it is now at 10 years. So we're not saying don't give incentives, we're just saying evaluate the relevance, especially in the tight fiscal space that we find ourselves in. On the health promotion levy, I agree with you that we should be grateful that it's performing better than anticipated. But very often with taxes linked to behavior, when they are presented in the parliamentary committees, the tax collection is often seen as a secondary objective. The addressing of the behavior is often put before the tax collection. Especially because National Treasury is very much against ring-fencing of revenue generated from taxes linked to behavior. So I think what we are trying to say is, are we achieving the objective we have set out for the tax? Thank you.
Next.
Honourable Tobias asked for clarification on whether National Treasury, said the public debt will reduce to 56%. According to the MTBPS of last year, it said that yes, net loan debt will increase over the medium term, and the figure, the 56% that you're referring to, is the National Treasury projection that net loan debt will stabilize to 56.5% by 2025-2026. So it'll be interesting to see how far National Treasury revises the projections that they have done, the MTBPS, with regards to...
Your own projections?
With regards to... Okay, we don't have those, but okay. Thank you.
Dr. Yankis.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Thank you, colleagues. I just want to comment on Honourable Toya's point on policy. I think we always try to be cautious on not be seen to take a position on policy issues, but obviously the budget and policy is also the left to comment, but we don't take any position on policy. But I think just my comment, you know, I just want to give it a bit of a context. There's this global discussion in terms of how do governments raise more revenue and trying to think about differently, and certainly the discussion has escalated in recent years to say what are some of the ways on government to try to deal with inequalities and so on. And I think even South Africa is always been part of the discussion, you know, and so on and so forth. And certainly, you know, revenue policy, it becomes a very important aspect, as you commented on. I think the issue on the tax expenditure, tax incentives, you know, it's obviously the realization that it does take away the revenue. It's a revenue foregone from the fiscals, which essentially is used by government to incentivize, to encourage more investments in the economy. And I think what we, as Gloria has been, she was saying, what we have been doing is engage with Treasury to say what has been some of the outcome of some of the incentives that put out there. And there hasn't been clearly a report or a mechanism that shows, you know, for the past 20, 20 years or whatever. These are the incentives put out in different sectors. I think we had done a report earlier, I think in 2014, which shows the extent of expenditure over the couple of years. But I think what has not come out has been how much has been realized in terms of outcomes. I think that's what we're trying to emphasize, is say, the more you get more incentives in place, let's realize the implications and try to let that informed by some way of saying this is what we've achieved over the years. And there is certainly expectation of more incentives given out going forward, which of course is currently foregone, but I think the emphasis we put is, look, what have we, what informed the policies and what have we received as the incentives that needs to be reviewed. As I think for past 3 years, government has been saying in the budget documents, they are reviewing some of these incentives because they think they are not effective in the budgetary documents, in various documents. They have been so past four, 3 years. I think the emphasis is just to say how far will that before even increase or extend some of the incentives. I think that's where we are in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairs. Just to start with, just to reinforce the point that Musani made, we're not venturing into making policy suggestions and recommendations. I think what we're doing is sort of going methodically through different areas of spending and incentivization and saying these are the kind of issues that we think members could consider and ask National Treasury and other departments for more information, for reports, for assessments. So, and I think to thank our colleague Gloria for answering the questions to Honorable Tobias, I think fairly effectively. I wanted to come back. My colleague Rashad dealt with the issues over the broader macro framework, and just to say that, you know, in the pre-MTBPS and MTBPS presentations we did, we actually made an effort to talk more about the global and the context for that. And so we took a decision not to go back into revising that because we actually see the same global pessimistic story and not to reiterate that. And with that, repeating the point that, you know, everybody has been revising their growth estimates down, and we faced, I think, a fairly uncertain period in the global economy, but also in South Africa for our specific reasons on how we're dealing with problems in SOEs and Eskom and others. And so I think in given this uncertainty, it becomes even harder to project and to estimate what future growth would be, what future revenues would be, and those kinds of things. So I think going forward, and just to what Rashad was saying, is that when we assess the performance of National Treasury in their estimates and forecasts, it's done within a peer group. It's done within comparing them to others, and also to see whether there's an internal, whether there's a bias in the estimates. That said, I mean, I think the graph where we show potential, what I think is worth reiterating what Rashad was saying is that those is the idea of what the target should be or what we want to achieve of about, was it 5.4% growth, those were set in 2011 when everybody, including ourselves, were fairly optimistic about what could be achieved, but also came out of a high growth period before the global financial crisis. And we know that in South Africa and around the world, a lot of that growth before the global financial crisis came out of not job-creating areas. It came out of increased financial speculation, increases in house prices, and basically asset prices linked to speculation. And so I think we may have come out with over-optimistic numbers, and I think one of the things that we should consider going forward and with the next MDP and MTSF is saying what would be realistic in terms of what potential growth is. And the potential growth given by the organizations like the IMF and the South African Reserve Bank is based on sort of what they see in the economy over the last few years and taking that forward based on the factors. And I think what we need to think about, and I think the big question, which I think is not necessarily the role of the PBO, is to think about what is going to drive growth and how much do we have to change what we did in the past so that we will actually attract the investment but also create the conditions to increase, as I think both PBO said and the FSC said, the low levels of aggregate demand in the economy. And as again, Rashad pointed out that we haven't had the job creation, but also we haven't had the increases in remuneration. And we're seeing that, and also with the low levels of investment, government trying to maintain expenditure ceilings, we're not seeing forces within the South African economy that are going to drive that aggregate demand. So I'll end there, and I hope that answers the first question. I think it was Honourable George that asked that about sort of what is sustainable, and to say in this global and current environment, you know, that's a very big question. Thank you.
Are you done? Thank you to the PBO team. Are there any follow-up questions? One, two. Co-Chair Karim, questions from your side? Comment Bosa will come in, and on both Tobias. It's not yet. Sorry.
Not each link of my committee phoned me to say that he can't make it, so can somebody acknowledge? Not each link of, he phoned me to say that he can't make it to the committee. Somebody can acknowledge that he's absent for that, for reasons that are understandable. Thank you.
Thank you, staff. Note, please make a note of that. Let's go to the follow-up questions. On the Kamasa.
One, two, we'll go down the...
Yes, Chair. I wonder if the people could comment on this, that every time State SA releases the GDP growth, it often mentions certain sectors which are contributing to the failure to grow, mining being one of them. Almost consistently, sometimes manufacturing goes up, goes down, retail goes up, down, and all of that. What is missing? Perhaps one has not really read deep into that. Is an explanation of why this inconsistency, and more importantly, what should both government and the private sector and labor do to turn the situation around in those particular sectors which are largely contributors to the GDP growth? Thank you.
Number two.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thank you, PBO. Some of the questions that I wanted to ask have already been asked. Except that I just want to comment on slide 8, which has already been answered. I just wanted to check actually what the implications of these negative findings are, and particularly, but I think the Honourable Chair already answered the part of provinces, because I also wanted to just check what are the implications, what does it mean then if the reports of the provinces are not available. The other one that's already been answered, which I wanted to ask, was with regard to the health promotion levy also, to say I agree with your answer and everything, but I just had this in my mind that would we ask the same question about cigarette smoking or alcoholic beverages, because also there are health implications there on people. But I think in this particular case, the focus was on raising a tax. So it's by way of commenting, but that was my thinking, that I don't think we should mix the two of actually saying we got the targeted amount and even exceeded. But we it could also mean that we didn't realize that there is such a huge number of people who love sugar. And people who like people who like alcoholic beverages, people who love sugar will pay for it. They will not stop just because they'd rather compromise other areas of their life. But the real thing that I would like to speak to is the issue of zero rating of certain items, where you mentioned that we may need to relook at that. Fair enough. But maybe if you can share, or is it the position of PBO that we are proposing, or it's just a proposal? Because I'm thinking that the issue of zero rating has been a very big battle for us to achieve for some of the items. And then are there any particular ones that you think we would need to? Because I'm just trying to imagine the community out there when you start telling them that you are going to reverse the zero rating. And more so that a lot of items were zero rated for a specific reason. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Tobias.
Chair, I'm going to ask PBO to forgive me if I belabor the point that I made earlier on, because I'm trying to think and it's very difficult for me to think. I'm not so smart. So sometimes I get helped by people like them if they explain certain things in a particular way. You see, here's an argument that's raised very sharply, and I like the way Rashad puts it. Tax buoyancy should be measured by economic growth. I like the concept, because in simple terms, it means when the economy grows, the more taxes you will collect, therefore your tax system will be buoyant. It's a simple mathematical equation, but in the South African context, it's a very difficult mathematical equation, because it comes from a context where the role of CIT and PIT has not been measured in equal terms for it to be able to generate enough revenue. And I don't want to raise that argument here. It's a policy imperative. There's a view in the ruling party that there should be wealth tax. There are those that, no, don't touch business, you see. Don't touch them, and so on. If you touch them, they will go. Now, I thought, Rashad, you created I was trying to create a platform by asking a question about the measurement that has been used in terms of the role that the private sector in creating jobs. Because once there is not enough jobs in the economy, you will have no other avenues but to look at expenditure ceilings and so on, which is not sustainable based on the arguments you've sustained in this room here for many years, to say, looking at expenditure, because there was an argument that suggested that let government spend because it creates more jobs, and then at the same time, what do you spend, what do you have? And here you also juxtapose it with the argument that there's a peer review mechanism that evaluate the role of National Treasury when it forecasts based on its peers. But in this context, there's a policy imperative where the role of state-owned enterprises has made that mechanism not to do what it's supposed to do, but it's a side issue, because it's only on the role of state-owned enterprises, but other implements in the economy that has not played ball. For instance, let's look at savings that companies has made by not investing in the market. We have not spoken about that. At what point do we engage? That's what I'm saying. The limitations of an engagement of such matters that are macroeconomic policy issues in the budget limits the analogy to look at the problem itself in the economy and solve it in its entirety. Because as long as investments are limited, and you know, I was reading something about how many companies have saved money not invested in the economy last week, and I looked at that and said, okay, that answers my question. Why job creation is not growing, and so on. And I want your comment. I know you don't. It's not a policy issue. It's a rent and sense question. It's a mathematical equation, like you made it, as you did now. And I'm interested to understand your thinking without having to take a posture, but based on your economics and how you understand them, to say it without going to directions that you don't want to go to design and your team and so. Now saying that, I'm sorry, Chair. Let me pause there.
You made a very important point on what lies. When the members come to be sworn in the sixth parliament, there will be induction of members. There will be induction sessions for committees. That the committees on finance and appropriations in the two houses have a day or a day and a half set aside to deal with the matter you just raised. To empower themselves to do the work of the next 5 years. But you must start when you come here. Thank you for that remark. And I engaged with the PBO last year already to be part of that induction period of new members. Thank you. It's very important to look at the reality. The reality is we are in a highly constrained fiscal position. That's the reality. How do we deal with it? And if you look at the first sentence in the presentation on the MTPBS, South Africa finds itself at the crossroads. What do we do about it? Several summits have been held. The outcome and the solutions of those summits must be implemented. And that's where Parliament comes in. That's our job. What's being implemented? To take us forward, to get higher economic growth, rebuild SARS, get more revenue, and get more people employed. Look at education. Look at the skills that this country needs. We are now flying engineers in from Italy, India and China. Fantastic. Bring them, but keep them to train our people to get where they are. Yes. And when we visit our high schools, motivate our learners to go and study engineering, to become an accountant, to become a project manager. That's what we need. That's what we need. Artisans, yes. Bricklayers, boilermakers. Be practical. I think then we can go forward. You may respond, and then we'll go to the closing remarks. Questions? Questions? Sorry.
It's triggered by your slide 15, where you're talking about the possible additional support to ESCOM. Actually, it comes from the President's speech who said that we will be budget allocated. Now, I want to find out from you, I don't know, what do you think would be the percentage? Because in SAA, you know, there was a percentage. Remember, we just discussed our brainstorming, then we wait for the actual thing tomorrow. Okay? But, and where will this money come from? I'm trying to think, where will it come from? Because there is an expenditure ceiling. Will there be an increase in the expenditure? Maybe there'll be budget cuts, like in the previous financial year, where there were budget cuts from other departments, from the non-expenditure departments who failed to spend their budget. And then that money was then cut and then allocated, and also from the ceiling. Where will this come from? And then I know that in our report we recommended an additional support to SAA to strengthen their balance sheet so that they can be able to find equity partners. You know? Now, what I want to check with you, do you think this, I know there was a question that said, have they made the requirement to access the payout that was given to them? But do you think there would be, because this is another talking about another budget or another financial, do you think there would be additional bailout for SAA? Because indeed in our interrogation and also in our oversight, we found that they still needed to be assisted. So will that come? Because now I know there's another one. I mean, ESCOM is coming in. How much do you think ESCOM would give? We just brainstorming, thinking. Because to me, if it's 100 million, my fear is that it might trigger the rating agents to react. So, but what do you think would be reasonable? You know, just we just brainstorming on that one. Thanks. Over to you.
Thank you, Bibio.
There were a few questions that related to my part of the presentation and areas that I work in. The first was from Honorable Kwabaza regarding the performance of the economy broken down by sector. We don't really deal in what exactly is going wrong in mining or agriculture. Those are more economic policy questions rather than public finance questions. Having said that, though, the PBO on a quarterly basis monitors the economy at a sectoral level. So if you're interested in performance of the economy on the sector level, we do, to an extent, delve into some of the reasons for poor performance in mining or manufacturing or agriculture. I would suggest having a look at the PBO's quarterly economic brief. The last one came out in December, the next one comes out in March, and in that particular one we detail, like you mentioned, mining, the fact that mining contracted over the last quarter, it grew quite strongly with the previous quarter, contracted with the previous quarter, and so you're right, over the last eight quarters, mining has contracted in four of those quarters. So the implication of that for us is poor mining performance means poor revenue growth, which means strain for the fiscus, and that's insofar as the PBO considers that sector and the sectoral part. Regarding Honourable Deputy Chair or Second Chair's question, co-chair's my bad, co-chair's question, we have not done our own estimates on what the equity injection required for ESCOM would be, but publicly available estimates from different organizations and banks say between 10 to 15 billion. Maybe more, maybe less, we don't really know. The question over here is there sufficient wiggle room in the current expenditure framework to fund it within that framework? If not, given the importance of the expenditure ceiling, do we, as you suggested, cut from other departments, which has direct implications for service delivery, or maybe there's a bit of a windfall over here in the sense that on a year-to-date basis, expenditure growth, what was budgeted, has been a bit slower than what was actually budgeted for. Now, is that sufficient to compensate or to make space for fiscal support required to ESCOM, given the reluctance of government to actually breach, justifiably so, that expenditure ceiling? So I think we'll get some details on that tomorrow. Regarding SAA, I don't have any input at this point in time. Thank you.
Are you done?
Was response in terms of our findings on the medium-term strategic framework. We have a complete detailed report on all our findings. Normally but I don't think we will have time to present the report to our committees. But we do communicate with CPME. In most of the cases, they really take this serious, and they basically change their documents and improve on what they are doing, and I'm sure they are currently busy with the planning for the new MTSF, the formulation of the new MTSF with the different departments or different sectors. But we do take it forward in terms of our findings. We will take it forward.
The other reality we face, honourable members, is that the demands in provinces is rising. Yes. You see it every week when you do your constituency work. Was there anyone else I missed? Oh, Dr. Yankees?
Thank you, Chair. I think there was a question on VAT and zero rating from Honorable Snokonyane. I think, Chair, when you look at the discussions last year within the finance committees, related to VAT, I think there were mixed response from the public submissions and even presentations, and there was certainly the public participants who suggested that the list is small, they need to, be expanded, you know, and other things, you know, maybe they're not relevant, and so on and so forth. I think the point of what we're trying to say here is we'll say how, what is the government's thinking around that. Of course, I think Senate Committee on Finance had a report on that, but I think we're not taking a position to say the whole list needs to be done away with, but I think taking into account the discussions in the Senate Committee on Finance, there was certainly indications that the list as is, as you rightfully say, is not finance reaching other sector of the community which are intended to, and so on, and how do you make sure that the list, zero-rated list, is more effective if you know, in trying to address some of the what do you call that, regressivity of the text as it, the nature of the text as it is. So it's just to say, you know, what is the standing in that regard. Thank you.
Yes.
I'd just like to add on that the PBO did have a VED report which was circulated to the committees, I think, in 2017, and we also had a follow-up brief on the VED, which indicated that we do acknowledge the need to have a zero-rated list, but I think the relevance of it was questionable. There has to be a discussion on whether all the items that are in the basket currently are necessarily used by the poor. We are speaking of fruits like kiwi, we are talking about asparagus, broccoli, and the likes. We need to have conversations about, do we still want for the poor to be using paraffin because it is zero rated? Because we also acknowledge that the more items you have in your zero rated basket, then you are going to collect less VAT. But are you really targeting the poor in your zero rated list? Right now we have added to the list the white flour and the cake flour. Now the question becomes, who's going to benefit the most from those? As we know that VAT is paid at each point of sale. So your big bakeries will obviously benefit from the use of that white flour. On the other hand, you have the final output of white bread still being subjected to VAT. So who is going to really benefit from the use of this flour? So those are the things that we're saying we need to think deeper into. The VAT panel considered 66 items. Out of the 66 items, only 3 of those made it to the as additions to the zero-rated items. So again, it also depends on who is giving submissions to these panels. Can we confidently say that the poor really had a loud voice in contributing to that panel? Do they have access to the resources, the internet, etc.? Thank you.
Anyone else? You're done? Thank you. Honorable Karim, any inputs from you or announcements? Nothing?
The finance study group needs to remain behind for 5 minutes. Thanks.
The finance study group just stay behind when we adjourn. All the members, before I give over to Honorable Pausa for the closing remarks, tomorrow at 10 o'clock, the Finance and Preparations Committee is back here in this venue. And then again Thursday, 12:30 until 15 hours, the engagement with the Minister of Finance and Team Treasury on the National Budget. Honorable Pausa, I request you to do the closing remarks of this meeting.
Response given by the lady over there. You know, on the zero rating items. Now, you see, government is expected to respond to the needs of the people. There was a serious outcry out there, which then informed the decision to increase the zero rating items. For instance, on the, you said it's flour. I'm just checking with you.
correct one, because I mean a decision was taken, and that decision, Tani, if I'm not wrong, it's now a resolution of the House.
Yes, you are right, and white bread flour is going to be fortified, and then it's going to be a resolution.
How do you reverse that? So which means, even if you want to debate it, does look like this advice is coming at any rate. Should have come before submission to the House. It is now a resolution of the House. All right, but I would like to take this opportunity and indeed thank all the members for attending. The success of these meetings depend on your attendance. Thank you very much, and for your quality inputs and meaningful engagement with the presentation. I would also like to thank PBO for the presentation. Indeed, it has assisted us in giving us insights in preparation for our actual engagement after the taping. And I must say that you always assist us. I think our thinking is sharpened now. And the use of this pre-briefing will start from the time when the minister presents, and then we'll be able to be listening, you know, in a critical, you know, departing from your preparation, your successful preparation for the committees to engage. Well, 2019 budget is crucial as we are approaching the end of the fifth parliament and the much-awaited 2019 general elections. Well, honourable members, only 11 years remain before 2030 for the National Development Plan goals implementation or achievements. Our people are expecting decent jobs, inclusive economy, quality education, healthcare, human settlements, and a range of basic services. Investors, credit ratings agencies are also keeping a close eye on the 2019 budget. Well, Parliament, or as Parliament, we are concerned about the reported gaps in reporting and performance against the outcomes of the NDP as expressed in the MTSF. It's even more worrying to note that departments do not effectively align their plans and budgets with NDP outcomes. I think moving forward, you should work out a plan on how you are going to assist, because you are working closely with the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. How are you going to assist in ensuring that there is alignment? Because if there's no alignment, what are they implementing? And how are we going to achieve the NDP goals come 2030? I think that alignment is needed now. So moving forward, we might not come, but you will still be here. Please assist in terms of the planning, you know, so that at least there is alignment of those and the budget. Remember, it's not just coming from Zamsani. Tani once proposed that we must also look at the mandate paper. It comes from the mandate paper. It says there must be an alignment. So yours is to assist in advising on that, on those gaps. Well, as Parliament, we will scrutinize the 2019 budget to see if allocations and plans are in line with NDP goals. But I know that the remaining team will only go as far as scrutinizing your division of revenue bill. But as long as somewhere there will be a report that says, you know, that the scrutiny should focus on the alignment now of the NDP goals and the budget. Yeah. The sixth parliament will have to carry the baton by conducting robust in-year monitoring of departmental spending to ensure that every rand spent takes us closer to our vision for a prosperous South Africa. Well, honourable members, PBO, the delegation from PBO, thank you very much. Indeed, we had a constructive engagement.
Thank you, honourable members. That concludes the business of this meeting. The meeting is closed. Thank you.
So we come back at 1:00. Thank you.
have a discussion with them. Thank you.